The headlines: Iran says the latest stance of the International Atomic Energy Agency on the country's nuclear program is an incorrect report. London says it does not rule out supplying Kiev with fighter jets as the West slams Russia on fanning the flames in Ukraine. U.S. Muslim lawmaker Ehan Omar vows not to remain silent after House Republicans oust her. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shah Ahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. Iran says it regrets the latest stance of the International Atomic Energy Agency on the country's nuclear program. Iran's nuclear chief, Mohammad Islami, said that the IAEA inspector had reported to the agency based on incorrect interpretations on Tehran. He added that the inspector found out his error of judgment, and after the Islamic Republic provided explanations to the UN nuclear watchdog, on the same day, he corrected those exercises. And also, the IAEA accused Iran of substantially modifying an interconnection between two centrifuge clusters enriching uranium. In that report, it also criticizes Iran for possible uranium enrichment up to 60% purity at its Fordo nuclear plant. Iran's ambassador to the UN says a preliminary investigation shows Israel was responsible for Saturday's terrorist attack on a military site in the central Iranian city of Isfahan. Saidi Ravani also pointed out Israel's prime minister's recent interview with U.S. media, in which he admitted, quote, of taking action against certain weapons development sites in Iran. Ravani called Israel's assault a brazen violation of international law and urged the UN Secretary Security Council to take action against the regime. The Iranian diplomat stressed that his country reserves the right to defend its national security and respond to any aggression and threats against Israel. He also added that they are responsible by a tweet against the Ukraine's president's advisor about the drone attack, in which he has accused Iran of providing weapons to Russia. This while Tehran has repeatedly denied giving weapons to Moscow to be used in the Ukraine war. Political analyst Fadi Zaidi earlier joined us with his take on the issue. Let's take a listen.
The Israeli regime is engaging in this type of illegal attacks with the full support of the United States, and the U.S. is shielding the Israeli regime at the U.N. If it was a normal situation, Israelis would not be able to repeat this type of attacks. And what the United States is saying is that we will go to the negotiating table, get some concessions out of Iran, and the concessions that we didn't get at the negotiating table will have the Israelis attack those sites that we could not negotiate over and get what we want through Israeli attacks. So what the Americans are saying is that either you give us concessions at the negotiating table, or we will destroy the areas that we were not successful in negotiating about. And this is obviously not acceptable. And to be honest with you, all these type of activities at the end of the day have strengthened Iran's nuclear program and military programs.
Now, Iranians are celebrating the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution that led to the ouster of the U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime. The celebrations, starting on February 1st, coincide with the return of the late Imam Khomeini from several years of exile in 1979, and they culminate in nationwide rallies.
The 44th anniversary of the late Imam Khomeini's return to Iran from several years of exile, marking the beginning of 10 days of celebrations. In Iran, festivities have begun, with Iranians from all walks of life gathering in the mausoleum of Imam Khomeini to renew their pledge of allegiance to the late founder of the Islamic Revolution, while a special ceremony is also underway, demonstrating that the divide-and-rule policy of the enemies of the Islamic Revolution has failed.
I've come here to renew my pledge of allegiance with Imam Khomeini, who was an advocate of social justice and at the forefront of fighting oppressors worldwide.
Assyrians have been living in Iran for more than 3,000 years. This shows that no matter what our enemies do, we will remain united as a nation.
Over the past 44 years, we have managed to overcome many obstacles simply because we remain united, and it's important for our nation to remain that way.
A point that was also raised by the keynote speaker of the ceremony, Parliament Speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf.
The Islamic Revolution is known worldwide with the name of Imam Khomeini, a great man known for fighting imperialism who always invited the nation to be united in the face of our enemies' plots and said, "You know, you're walking down the right path when your enemies do everything they can to stop you. If your enemies are ever indifferent, it is a clear sign that we have deviated from the right path. So their increased animosity is actually a good sign."
That is why the presence of masses at the mausoleum this year is more significant than previous years, considering a period of foreign-backed riots in the country and Western countries increasing political pressure on Iran to unprecedented levels.
We are here to say that we are proud of our revolution and our country.
When Imam Khomeini needed our support to topple the Pahlavi regime, my sons did not hesitate.
I am here to say that I will always support the leader and the Islamic revolution.
My son gave his life for this revolution, and I am here to uphold his values.
Iranians are celebrating the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution at a time when they've managed to thwart foreign-backed riots in the country and bring peace and calm back to all the cities across Iran. More than anything, the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution is a show of solidarity. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Also defying the international outcry, Israel has approved plans to build about 1,200 settler units in occupied Al-Quds. The regime has endorsed two plans to build housing units and other structures for commercial and public purposes for Israeli settlers. The new structures will be built in six neighborhoods and settlements. The Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, has slammed the regime's settlement plans and called them a crime and an attempt to change the status quo of Al-Quds. The movement said that Judaization projects will never legitimize Israel's occupation. It added that Palestinians will continue to resist Israel's colonial plans until they liberate their ancestral land. Currently, 1,700 settler units are living in 145 major settlements and 140 settler outposts in occupied West Bank, and that is East Al-Quds. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. Now, despite the escalation of the Ukraine war in many fronts, the West seems to be hell-bent on supplying Kiev with more weapons. Now, the UK says it does not rule out sending fighter jets to Ukraine.
On the process of jets, I mean, pretty clear that, you know, one thing I've learned over the last year is don't rule anything in or rule anything out, right? I mean, that is the simple reality, is we respond to the needs of the Ukrainians at the time, based on what the Ukrainians tell us, what we see in things like intelligence and our knowledge of the Russians on the battlefield. And right now what the Ukrainians need is the ability...
Wallace, however, said fighter jets would not be, quote, a magic wand in the war. He added that London is open to sending other military systems to Ukraine to help it with its war against Russia. His comments came after Downing Street apparently ruled out spending combat planes to Ukraine as non-pragmatic. The Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and his office said such aircraft are highly sophisticated and takes months to learn how to operate one of them. The United States, for its part, has also ruled out any deliveries of the F-16s to Ukraine, and for now, Kiev has been urging its Western allies to supply it with long-range missiles and fighter jets to counter Russia. Western countries have so far supplied Kiev with arms and munitions worth less than billions of dollars since the start of the war this year. Russia has warned that such arms supplies only serve to prolong the war. The U.S. House Republicans have voted to oust the Muslim lawmaker Ilhan Omar from a high-profile committee, accusing her of making, quote, anti-Semitic remarks. Omar, a Democrat who lost her position as a member of the House's Foreign Affairs Committee through a narrow margin of a vote of 2018 to 2011, the Republicans based their decision to oust her on Omar's 2019 remarks in a tweet for which she had later apologized. In that tweet, she suggested that Israel's shorter than the U.S. politics and it was motivated by money rather than principle. In an address to that session, Omar said that there was still bias in the U.S. on the people's original geographical location, religion, or skin tone.
There is this idea that you are a suspect if you are an immigrant, or if you are from certain parts of the world, or a certain skin tone, or a Muslim. It is no accident that members of the Republican...
House Democrats believe that ousting Omar was a revenge for removing two Republicans from committee assignments 2 years ago. They accuse the Republicans of ignoring anti-Semitic comments from their own members. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries and Omar's ouster were not about accountability for her past remarks, but it was about political revenge. Anger continues to grow in the U.S. over last month's police killing of a young African American. The string of fatal shootings of blacks in recent years, and most importantly, the most recently killing-motivated incidents of releasing serious questions about the growing police violence in the United States. Here's a report.
Black Lives Matter. This is a popular slogan we often come across in the streets of the United States following the fatal shooting and beating to death of African Americans there. That began with the racially motivated killing of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, among others. Anger and shock once again prevail as American protesters march in different cities to denounce police brutalities and demand justice for another victim, 29-year-old Tyre Nichols. The man was beaten to death by a group of officers in the city of Memphis, Tennessee, after he was stopped for a traffic violation in early January. Nichols was in confusion as to why he had been stopped, but before he could know, the cops started kicking, punching, and pepper spraying him while he was crying for help. Nichols was pronounced dead in a hospital 3 days later. Activists are still in disbelief on how the police could treat a member of the society like Nichols as an enemy in the battlefield.
Here I am now, in 2023. And I'm looking at another video, this in color, where I'm seeing another black man being beat to death Rodney didn't die. This is worse. It's beat to death with no mercy on no crime that they can even find that he had committed.
Here at Nicole's funeral, his family desperately called for an end to police brutality against the African American community.
We have to fight for justice. We cannot continue to let these people brutalize our kids.
We need to take some action because there should be no other child that should suffer the way my son and all the other parents here have lost their children.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris, who was also present at the funeral, slammed the killing and talked about an act that has a slim chance of getting passed in the Congress.
And as Vice President of the United States, we demand that Congress pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. Joe Biden will sign it. And we should not delay. And we will not be denied. It is non-negotiable.
Ironically, U.S. officials have turned up on such occasions in the past and made similar promises, but to no avail. Figures show that police brutality remained as rampant as it had been in the previous years. Law enforcement killed nearly 1,200 people, or about 100 people a month last year, making it the deadliest for police violence. Repeated shooting and lack of transparency have already terrorized America's black community. Many believe the reoccurrence of the brutal scene cannot be prevented by just suspending culprits. No African American will truly become safe from police brutality until its root causes are identified and dealt with.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
How the blockaded Gaza Strip looks like and how its residents deal with the hardships in the besieged area is hard to describe. Every day is a new tragic story which the Zionist regime has imposed on innocent Palestinians. However, the fabricated regime of Israel is getting close to its end. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "This past August, Ahmad Amir, 34, stood atop the wreckage of a residential building in the northern Gaza Strip town of Beit Hanun. In the scorching sun, he smashed giant blocks of rubble with his hammer, breaking them into smaller pieces and loading them onto the back of a truck. Amir works for a construction company that recycles the debris and rubble left behind by Zionist regime attacks on Gaza, a business that shows no sign of letting up. The Zionist regime's three-day attack at the beginning of August 2022 killed at least 49 Palestinians and destroyed or damaged 2,000 homes throughout Gaza, including the building that Amir was scavenging on behalf of his employers. I'm conflicted between being glad that I got a job and upset that it came at a cost of other people losing their houses, Amir said. Amir had been unemployed for more than 5 years before getting this job in May 2021, shortly after another Israeli regime attack on the Gaza Strip destroyed over 2,200 homes. Before, Amir said, I hardly ever got work and had to borrow money from my relatives to support my family at subsistence level. Now he works 12 hours a day for $15. The company he works for, he said, employs its workers on a short-term contract basis and doesn't provide them with health insurance even though the job itself is quite dangerous. There is the ever-present risk of a structural collapse since the buildings have not been completely leveled. At the least, falling debris can land workers in the hospital with a broken leg or arm. Amir believes the whole business is a cruel trick of fate. It does not seem just that one of the few sources of employment for residents of Gaza, with its 44% rate of unemployment, is among its ruins. According to Naji Sarhan of Gaza's Public Works and Housing Ministry, Gaza's rubble scavenging business dates back to the time of Operation Cast Lead. Taking place in late 2008 and early 2009, Cast Lead began a series of major Zionist regime attacks. During it, the fabricated regime of Israel destroyed or damaged over 11,000 housing units. Amid this destruction, the Gaza authorities devised a plan to reuse debris from destroyed buildings, said Sarhan. This reuse was essential since the Zionist regime has banned imports of so-called dual-use materials, which includes many building supplies as part of its 15-year blockade on Gaza. And despite the Gaza reconstruction mechanism, an arrangement overseen by Israeli regime that is supposedly intended to facilitate reconstruction has been proceeding slowly. All the debris that Amir collects will be transported to a crusher and then reconstituted into concrete blocks for reconstruction efforts or new building projects. Meanwhile, workers like Mohammad Medouch, 25, scavenge for another valuable building component, iron. Medouch lost his job at a garment factory in 2012 and has worked in the rubble salvage business since the summer of 2014, when the Zionist regime launched yet another major attack on Gaza. Despite sustaining multiple work injuries from falling debris, such as leg and arm fractures, he could not afford to take time off, he said. I had no alternative but to accept this position. Anything is better than nothing in Gaza. Debris is also turning into a profitable business for some. Mohammed Abu Jabbar, 48, who runs numerous construction ventures, quickly adapted to the new economic environment and shifted his business focus on recycled rubble. He said, necessity is the mother of invention, stating that with so many Zionist regime's restrictions on construction supplies, there were severe shortages of cement and iron. As a result, in recent years, his cement block factory had decreased production by around 70% due to the Zionist regime's blockade. With the recycling of debris, his factory's production has seen an increase in production by 30% following the most recent assaults in 2021 and 2022. Abu Jabbar said that the Zionist regime tries to hinder the recycling process because they don't want our factories to operate and the city to be rebuilt. He said that the Zionist regime had even added stone crushers to the list of banned import items, but that his company made local crushers out of used equipment and created roughly 20 tons of concrete per day. In addition to providing employment opportunities, recycled building materials are also cheaper. Abu Jaba said at a locally produced cinder blocks cost $22 compared to $31 for an imported block. Even with cheaper materials on offer, many Gaza neighborhoods have still not been rebuilt. Only 40% of the completely demolished residential units from Operation Castlight have been rebuilt, according to Sarhan. What is the real cost of recycled materials? The cost of rebuilding Gaza is not cheap. A 2021 study by the World Bank, European Union, and the UN estimated that Gaza's immediate housing reconstruction needs totaled up to $160 million. While that study downplays the Zionist regime's direct role in the destruction, it also estimates that total reconstruction before the 2022 Israeli regime attacks would cost $345 to $485 million. Sarhan estimates that reconstruction buildings and infrastructure damaged by the Zionist regime attacks in 2021 and 2022 will cost at least $500 million. But who knows what it will cost after another Israeli regime attack? He said, Israel frequently attacks Gaza City. Then, after one attack, they launch another attack on the city after it has been restored. But this time, in August 2022, Israel attacked the city before we had repaired half of the structures that had been devastated in the aggression of 2021. Each time the Zionist regime attacks Gaza, the reconstruction efforts begin anew. That's why contractor Samir Saad said the demand for recycled material keeps going on in Gaza. Saad said, since we began recycling, many residents have chosen to utilize recycled building materials to rebuild their structures since they are half as expensive as imposed ones, he added. I understand it is only a short-term improvement because the city won't see real growth unless building materials are freely and regularly allowed to enter the city. Even then, he said, Gaza's true rebuilding needs were far from covered.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and here is a short but sweet statement from the Holy Prophet's ninth infallible successor, Imam Muhammad al-Taghi al-Jawad, peace be upon him. Three features cause love: being fair in association, comforting in misfortunes, and having a good heart. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, determination. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of determination in the Islamic lifestyle. What we mean with the determination is that we must decide every day and promise ourselves that what I need to perform, I must have the intention of becoming a perfect human being. I must determine to be the man or the person or the Muslim which Allah wants me. Therefore, the determination is the pure intention of following the right path. In order to have an Islamic lifestyle, we cannot have this Islamic lifestyle unless until we have a firm determination of following the straight path. You know, in every day, in 5-time prayers, twice we say, اِهْدِنَا الصِّرَاطَ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ. O Allah, guide me towards the straight path, the straight path, صِرَاطَ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ, صِرَاطَ الَّذِينَ أَنْعَمْتَ عَلَيْهِمْ, the path of those whom you blessed with your blessings. Therefore, I need a determination in my daily prayers when I'm asking for the right path. Therefore, it is necessary that in my Islamic lifestyle, in my lifestyle, every day from morning till night, there shouldn't be even a single moment that I'm not determining in order to follow the right path. When I'm asking in the daily prayers twice every time and 10 times I say, اِهْدِنَا الصِّرَاطَ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ, then obviously I must have the determination when I'm outside the prayers, when I'm socializing with the people, when I'm working at a place, when I'm studying in the college or university, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of determination in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that it is necessary in order to have an Islamic lifestyle to have a firm determination to follow the straight path. And we ask for the following the straight path from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in our daily prayers. In every prayer, we recite Suratul Hamd twice, in the first rakat and the second rakat. Therefore, in my routine life, other than prayer time, I must strive for such things which I'm asking in the daily prayer. It is not true, it is not good that a person asks in the daily prayers that, O Allah, guide me to the right path, but he himself never follows or strives or tries to follow the right path. When we say we need to have the determination in the Islamic lifestyle, it means that I avoid all kinds of sins and I perform the wajibat or the obligatory actions or deeds that I need to perform. On the other hand, those deeds and actions which I couldn't perform, maybe I didn't wake up in the morning and I couldn't pray the morning prayers, so I must redo what I have missed. I must perform the things that I have missed. So it is necessary to redo or reperform the things that we missed in our life. At least when we are alive, we can do by ourselves. So this is what determination means. Determination means to follow the Sharia, to follow the pure intellect, and to follow the right path. And this is what it is being meant by determination, because when we determine to follow the right path, when we have the determination, pure determination of performing good deeds and avoiding the evil or the sins, then this is the time where Allah also helps us. He takes us from the darkness towards the light. Allahu waliyyu alladhina amanu yukhrijuhum min adh-dhulumati ila an-nur. Because this person has the pure determination, that's why Allah takes him out of the darknesses and takes him towards the light, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
With the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran in 1979, the United States of America lost control of what Jimmy Carter once described as an island of stability in one of the more troubled areas of the world. Under the leadership of Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Ruhollah Khomeini, The Iranian nation had fought an uphill battle in ousting the pro-West Shah. They were longing for a country with national sovereignty, a country with the greatest degree of self-determination, free from the yoke of the Eastern and the Western blocs. The so-called Island of Stability had been rocked by a revolution that had zero tolerance for foreign interference activities. And that was not what the Americans and other great powers of the time expected. And hence, the enmity towards Iran began. Separatism, especially in the country's border areas, was among the immediate challenges the newly established republic was faced with. Just one day after the victory of the revolution, separatists in Iran's Kurdistan and Azerbaijan revolted against the government. Meanwhile, a bloody assassination campaign was launched by the Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization, MKO, a terrorist group that took the lives of over 12,000 Iranian citizens. The terrorist cult also targeted a great number of Iran's senior officials with the ultimate aim of taking power in the country. Although the aim was naive, it stripped the country of figures who could play significant roles in the future of the republic. Terrorist acts were later committed by other enemies of Iran, especially the Israeli regime, in its desperate attempt to hamper the country's peaceful nuclear program. In April 1980, almost a year after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the U.S. Armed Forces carried out Operation Eagle Claw. But the mission was aborted as the American helicopters were caught in a sandstorm in Tabaz in the east of Iran.
Oh, it's, a significant reminder for United States and other countries that are thinking about attacking Iran that it's not going to be that easy. Iran now is much more powerful in terms of its military and in terms of its defense.
A few months later, in yet another abortive attempt known as the Nojeh coup d'etat, the country's enemies were trying to overthrow the newly established Islamic Republic of Iran, this time with the help of the traitorous members of the Air Force loyal to the dethroned Shah.
I think looking back on it, it was quite pathetic. You know, it was very badly organized and really it was half-hearted. It was making certain assumptions which wasn't going to come true. But nevertheless, it was quite testing for the newly formed government.
With two failed attempts, the Americans and their allies tried to restore their trampled pride, this time by encouraging an ambitious Iraqi dictator, namely Saddam Hussein, who launched an 8-year war against Iran. From the very beginning, riots, coup attempts, assassinations, and military actions were all coupled with monetary pressure on Tehran. For instance, in November 1979, through Executive Order 12170, Carter froze about $8.1 billion in Iranian assets, including bank deposits, gold, and other properties. The practice has continued since then.
For people who say these are just symbolic, that's not the case at all. We've literally locked up tens and tens of billions of dollars. These sanctions will come along with additional entities where people are hiding money. So no, these sanctions are highly effective.
These so-called highly effective sanctions are also known in Iran by yet another name, economic terrorism, as they have indiscriminately been targeting the whole nation.
People are also subjected to the most brutal form of economic terrorism, deliberately targeting innocent civilians to achieve illegitimate political objectives. The unlawful extraterritorial economic sanctions imposed on Iran by the United States in violation of Security Council Resolution 2231 represent the greatest threat to the achievement of sustainable development goals of Iran and many of our neighbors.
In just one case, U.S. unilateral sanctions have prevented EB children in Iran from having special wound dressings, resulting in their silence and slow deaths.
Since May 2018, that the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the JCPOA, up to May 2019, a number of children suffering from EB died only because they did not have Mepilex dressings. I want to tell those who claim to be defenders of human rights what has been the crime of this 37-day-old baby who died of the disease only because we did not have Mepilex dressings as a result of the U.S. sanctions.
Last but not least, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been the innocent victim of a politically motivated smear campaign spearheaded by Washington. Through their ugly, distorted lens, the Americans have been seeking to show Iran as a rogue state and a sponsor of terrorism, which is after nuclear bombs and wherein human rights have no place. Since 1979, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been faced with unending challenges and threats coming from outside. To the dismay of the country's enemies, all these subversive activities have only made Iran a stronger nation, a blow that does not break your back, only makes it stronger. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
Ever since Russia started its special operation in Ukraine, different aspects of America's interference and its support for the war in Ukraine have been identified. In addition to financial and military support of Ukraine, America has prolonged the war by supplying all sorts of weaponry to Ukraine. This has endangered the security and stability of the region as well as the wider world. We take a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Russia's TASS news agency has covered this story. The Russian Defense Ministry held a briefing in Geneva, Switzerland on the sidelines of the 9th Review Conference of the Biological Weapons Convention, where it presented evidence that Ukraine, with America's support, has been working with biological weapons components. Chief of Russian Radiation, Chemical and Biological Protection Force, Igor Krylov, said documented proof was presented that work with the components of biological weapons and research of agents of particularly dangerous and economically significant infections were conducted on Ukrainian soil with America's financial, scientific, and technical and human resources support. According to the military official, video materials were presented with the position of experts from Russia and other countries and testimonies of eyewitnesses and participants of the programs of the Defense Theater Reduction Agency, DTRA, of the U.S. Department of Defense. He noted one of them was a former employee of the U.S. Army Institute of Research, who once again confirmed the fact of work with dangerous pathogens in Ukrainian biolaboratories financed by the Pentagon. Igor Krylov said the Russian Defense Ministry has a document with the names of all the key American officials supervising Ukraine's military biological program. Krylov added, among them are former DTRA Director Kenneth Myers, Executive Vice President of the CIA-controlled InQtel venture Tara O'Toole, former head of the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, Thomas Friedman, former director of the National Institutes of Health, Francis Collins, former executive director of the Battelle Memorial Institute, Jeffrey Wadsworth, and Pfizer's chief scientific officer and president of the company's Global Research, Development and Medicine Division. The Russian defense official said these data are contained in the DTRA expanded report on the activity in Ukraine. Igor Krylov said American biological laboratories carry out work for intensifying the effect of pathogenic microorganisms without proper controls. The Russian defense official said United Nations Undersecretary General and High Representative for Disarmament Affairs, Izumi Nakamitsu, who said before the 9th Review Conference of the Biological Weapons Convention that there was no proper control process of compliance with the convention. As she put it, there were a lot of grey zones, especially when this concerned researchers carried out in the laboratories. Meanwhile, Russia Today has also covered the same story. The head of Russia's nuclear, biological and chemical defense troops said the U.S. military is moving its illegal biological weapons research out of Ukraine to other countries after reports about it have been leaked. Igor Krylov insisted during a briefing on Saturday, 24th of December, he said, the Pentagon is actively working to transfer its unfinished research projects to the countries in Central Asia and to countries in Eastern Europe. He added, the Americans have also been boosting cooperation with Cambodia, Singapore, Thailand, Kenya, and some other nations in the Indo-Pacific and Africa regions, with the U.S. Department of Defense being the most interested in countries that already possess laboratories with a high level of biocontainment. The Russian commander said data on illegal operations of U.S. laboratories in Ukraine was presented at the Organization for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons conference, which was held in Geneva, Switzerland, between 28th of November and 16th of December. He said the data included documentary evidence that work with components of biological weapons and studies of pathogens of especially dangerous and economically significant infections had been carried out on the territory of Ukraine with financial, scientific, technical, and personnel support from the United States of America. The official revealed that documents obtained by Russia during its special operation in Ukraine revealed that military biological programs have been performed by such organizations as Mechnikov Anti-Plague Research Institute in Kiev, Institute of Veterinary Medicine in Kharkov, and Lviv-based Research Institute of Epidemiology and Hygiene. Krylov added that those files also mentioned 3 Pentagon contractors and 7 high-ranking officials of the U.S. Department of Defense, the Pentagon. The Russian commander said a report by the U.S. Defense Threat Reduction Agency, DTRA, on its work in Ukraine confirmed the conduct of executive and training activities with pathogens of especially dangerous infections in Ukraine, adding that 80% of this report's content had been redacted. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story. The Russian Defense Ministry official Igor Krylov said the U.S. government spends federal budget funds on dual-purpose biological studies despite formal bans. The Russian defense official said despite formal bans, U.S. budget funds are spent on dual-purpose research. He said in this regard, the U.S. Republican Party opened a probe against Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and chief medical officer for U.S. President Joe Biden. Krylov said the probe confirmed facts of the government financing of experiments through an intermediary firm for intensifying the pathogenic power of viruses, including coronaviruses, whose incidence was not on a massive scale before 2019. Krylov added, the Pentagon transfers unfinished biological studies from Ukraine to Central Asia and Eastern Europe. He noted, according to the available information, the Pentagon actively transfers unfinished researchers under Ukrainian projects to Central Asia and Eastern European states. Simultaneously, America's defense agency is building up cooperation with countries in Africa and the Asia-Pacific region. Countries such as Kenya, Cambodia, Singapore, and Thailand. The defense official said the U.S. Department of Defense, the Pentagon, shows special interest in the countries on whose territory laboratories with a high level of biological isolation are already present. Krylov added, the transfer of dubious biological research from legal and ethical viewpoints to third countries allows the United States not to declare studies held under Pentagon's orders in annual reports on confidence-building measures under the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention, BTWC. Igor Krylov said the U.S. delegation's head refused to respond to Russia's charges concerning violations of the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention, BTWC, on the sidelines of the 9th Review Conference of the Biological Weapons Convention in Geneva, Switzerland. According to Krylov, Washington has something to hide, and its refusal to respond to the accusations and its blocking of initiatives to resume work on the convention's verification mechanism only further prove that. Igor Krylov said, the United States is not interested in the transparency of the convention implementation. Superheroes and Beyond. Part 1.
In a hot night in the summer in the late 1930s, a teenage boy who had recently lost his father in a street fight saw a superhuman character in his dream who had replaced his father. Strong, smart, fast, and protector of security. A superhero that the crisis-stricken American society anxiously waited for so he'd rescue them from the economic problems and injustice of the 1930s.